Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work in Progress, the Personal Productivity Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We are champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I am your host, Joanna. Let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Work in Progress. I am your host, Joanna, and today we're going to be chatting about how we can be smarter shoppers and how we can manage our budgets to be financial pros, hopefully, or at least we can try to. And I know this is something I need advice on, so I'm so excited to have Beatriz Pereira with us here in the studio to talk about this topic. She recently joined the Monash Business School after being an assistant professor of marketing at Iowa State University. But now she's here with us at Monash University, and her research focuses on consumer well-being and specifically in emotional regulation. But her recent work also looks more at issues in health and financial decision making. Hi, Beatriz. How are you today?
Hi, Johanna. Very good. Thank you for having me in the studio today.
Yeah, of course. It's amazing to have you here. I feel like this topic will always be so relevant, especially after COVID. I feel like everyone's shopping habits and financial productivity is a bit all over the place, but hopefully we can get some more advice on that today.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Before we start, would you like to introduce yourself with a bit about who you are and what it is you do?
Yeah, so I am a senior lecturer at Monash University. I joined just this May, so I'm brand new to Australia, so you might get a little bit of an accent. I live most of my adult and working life in the United States, and I am originally from Brazil.
Beautiful. And before we get started, I just want to jump into a little section that we will call Have You Met Beatriz? So we'll just get to know you a bit more with some questions. So my first one for you is, do you have a favorite book at all or something you're reading at the moment?
Yeah, so I used to be like a crazy bookworm growing up. I was, well, I am an absolute nerd and I'm unapologetic about it. So I used to read way more for pleasure than I do right now. It feels like I'm always trying to read something that is relevant for work. But one book that I think might resonate with a lot of listeners, because this is a very famous book, was that really had a impact on me growing up, was Catcher in the Rye. So I really absolutely loved that book, and I read it in Portuguese, and then later I bought an English version when I was in the US and read it again. My favorite fiction author is José Saramago. He was a Portuguese writer. He got a Nobel in Literature, I think, in 98 or so. Yeah. And I think his most famous book was called Ensaio sobre a Cegueira, that's translated to blindness, and was also adapted to a movie. And what I really like about Saramago is that he had a very different writing style. Like, he didn't use periods. He wouldn't mark, like, in... it was very different how he showed the dialogue starting for other, you know, other characters in the book. So it takes you a while to kind of understand and get into that rhythm, which violates like all rules of grammar that you learn. So it kind of feels interesting on that domain as well. But most of his books, he gets like humanity and puts them in an absurd, bizarre situation. And how do we express the best and the worst on us, right? So blindness, for example, is everyone in a town starts getting blind, and but one person, right? So and how people, how society completely collapses when we take for granted like being able to see, and then that's taken away from you. So I really like that, you know, thinking how the world would be if something like that extreme would happen. And because I was moving to Australia, there were a few things that I'm reading now. I'm reading Down Under from Bill Bryson. It is hysterical. And I also read something that was way more serious. It was called Telling Tennant's Story.
Okay.
And it's from Dean, let me see if I, Dean Ashender. Ashendern, and it's about the telegraph built from Adelaide to Darwin and all of the difficult relationships and history between the Aboriginal people of Australia and the colonizers. So that was really helpful to get me a good sense of things here.
Yeah, beautiful. It seems like you're very well versed in books. Do you enjoy reading books about like the places you're in or getting to know more about like history and stuff?
I really like for my, you know, leisure time, I rather fiction.
Yeah.
But I felt like, you know, you're moving to a new country. That's something you got to do. I read a lot of books that help me on my own writing and thinking about decision-making problems that consumers or, you know, any person faces. Most recently, I read one that was called The Myth of Normal, and it's written by a doctor and his son, Gabor and Daniel Mate. And it really talks a lot about how we have such like advanced, like, for example, medicine in the Western like idea of it, but like how we don't treat the body as a whole and how we don't recognize that our culture is a bit toxic and really inputs a lot of stress in our bodies. So it was a really interesting read that has been currently informing my research a lot. Like, and aside from a lot of the medical parts, there was one chapter that really spoke a lot to me that is called They Don't Care If It Kills You, Sociopathy as a Strategy. So basically talking about the food industry and the tobacco industry and how, like, it's not like they are intentionally trying to harm their consumers, but it's just, it doesn't matter, right? Because they're profiting out of products that don't necessarily make us healthier, doesn't help us achieve the well-being that we want. So that was a really interesting and well-rounded reading that talks about a lot of issues that, you know, normal things that we engage in the society these days really builds stress in our body and decreases our quality of life.
Yeah, amazing. I love how you take inspiration from what you read. So that's really cool. And in terms of movies, are you big into movies at all?
More or less, I would say I'm not really a super movie aficionado that like knows names and places and people and who does what. But a more recent movie that I really liked was Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's just, you think like it cannot grow like more bizarre and it does,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and it was super unexpected and I really liked the acting and the storyline was really nice. One movie that really spoke to me and made me cry like a baby was The Namesake. It's an Indian-American movie that talks about a family that immigrates to the U.S. because the father is a university professor. So that really resonated with me quite a lot.
Yeah. Wow. In terms of the first one, Everything Everywhere All at Once, I remember watching it and it was so bizarre. And I feel like I struggled to wrap my head around what was happening, but I don't think I've ever watched a movie like that. It was so interesting.
I need to watch it again because I did watch it on the plane to here.
Oh, yeah.
So I was definitely sleep deprived and not even sure what time zone I was
in. It would not have made sense then. Yeah, I think I need to watch it again for sure. Moving on, in terms of podcasts, do you like listening to podcasts at all?
Absolutely, because I'm a multitasker at heart.
Yeah.
And listening to podcasts allowed me to kind of exercise my brain. And, you know, it's this idea of we always need to be productive or doing something.
Yeah.
While we're doing something else. I really like Planet Money.
Okay.
And it talks a lot about financial decision making, economics, and I think one of the hosts is Australian, actually. And I do as a university instructor, I do add podcasts to my teaching. I have done this in the past as activities for the students to reflect on, and I assign a lot of podcasts from Planet Money. There's another one called Invisibilia that is really nice about like trying to uncover reasons for human behavior. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Do you find that incorporating podcasts into like education makes it a better learning experience?
I think students are more excited to do it because it's different, mm-hmm. right? And because it's not more, we already do so much reading.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's something different, but it also allows them to multitask, right? So it's just, and it's engaging, and then you reflect on it. I think it really sits better, like in terms of memory and remembering the concepts that were learned.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy it, yeah.
Amazing. And lastly, I'd like to ask if you have a famous role model or anyone you look up to. It doesn't have to be famous.
Yeah. So I struggle a lot with that because it's really hard to, you know, see someone as a role model. It's such a responsibility, right?
Yeah.
We all are humans. We all have faults. And but I took a lot of inspiration in my life from my grandparents primarily, and, you know, how hardworking they were and how loving they were to the family and nurturing. So I couldn't, you know, I was thinking about this question and I couldn't figure out like who would be a role model that I currently have that, you know, people would know about. So
yeah, no, I think that it is a really hard question. It's so hard to pick just one person that's a role model to you. But I think your grandparents are a beautiful answer. So thank you for that. I think we can jump right into our interview questions. So my first question for you is, how would you personally define personal productivity?
Yeah, this is a great question. And when I think about personal productivity, I feel like we often focus on the productivity side of it. And we're trying to see those metrics. We're trying to fill our time and need to be productive in terms of the standards that are put on us by others. But, you know, I like the idea of like personal productivity because you're really focused on the person. And you're going to have a lot of individual differences there because humans are all unique. I think that's the beauty in us. And you also have a lot of cultural differences, right? So moving from the US to Australia, I feel like here people have like a more relaxed demeanor. In the US, we're always trying to fill time and make sure we're not wasting time. But what does it mean to be productive, right? Is it accomplishing something that others are imposing on you or something that you want to achieve? So I like to see this as, you know, what is my contribution? So in a nutshell, it's basically trying to maximize what you want to be, but it doesn't need to be this obsession with filling out time and trying to achieve what others are expecting of you. I think most people get a lot of fulfillment from having a purposeful life and being able to be contributors to the world that we live in. So I think with that in mind, then you can define how to achieve your personal productivity based on different like thinking styles, different objectives in life.
Yeah, for sure. So really emphasizing the personal aspect of productivity. So it's more something that's personal to the individual, like everyone's got their own definition of what being productive is.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And this idea that it's a journey.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just like the short-term goals that don't necessarily help you achieve something that is bigger and more meaningful.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a really great way to put it. I feel like when we think about productivity, we might think of it in like a competitive sense.
Yes.
And I feel like that can be a very unhealthy way to go about being productive, because are you doing what's productive for you or what's productive as like the social construct of what productivity
is? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, amazing. So what do you think people get wrong when it comes to personal productivity other than that?
Yeah, you already mentioned the competition part of it, which is very other focused instead of focusing on what you want to accomplish, right? Which is, and if you're going to keep looking at others, there's always going to be better people than you.
Yeah.
On anything that you look for, right? It's very humbling experience to compare yourself to others. And it's just not a very good way to feel good about yourself if you're always trying to be best than everyone else. Because by default, most of us are not going to be the best on anything that we
do. Yeah.
We are usually, we joke like we're mediocre, right? We're on average, like someone is going to be on average. People be above average, below average. So just realization that, maybe you're mediocre on something, but you're really good on something else. And that's good. And then just focus on your strengths. The other thing that I think sometimes people get wrong is that they try to fill their days with activities. And they will do the same even for like leisure time when traveling, like just trying to fill every minute and not leaving room for the unexpected and things that actually build into very rewarding experiences, right? So for example, at work, just going to get that coffee and potentially talk to a colleague and learning about something that you wouldn't even consider, or just taking a walk and appreciating something beautiful, you might get a good idea on something that can actually help you in life, or picking up your kids at school when having that time to chat with other parents. Like all those things are actually helpful in a day-to-day basis. But if we're really having this routine that doesn't leave any time for us to enjoy life, then what's the purpose?
Yeah. And I think that's a really great way of seeing things as well. And I think that sort of inspires people to actually really consider what they want to be achieving as opposed to what other people would consider successful if they were to look at them. So I think that's a really great way to go about it.
I would say the other mistake would also be to focus so much on the short-term goals, right? Because again, this is all about a journey. And if you want to accomplish something later in life, you have to start spending time for it right now, right? So that's all we do in terms of education.
Yeah.
Right? We're spending a lot of time, spending a lot of resources. Most of the benefits you're not getting today, tomorrow, or even next year, they are longer term. So this focus on the short term can be problematic. And finally, I would also say too much focus on oneself, right? So I just said like putting the person back at center, but if we're only trying to achieve our own happiness, our own goals, that can be very isolating, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of research with older individuals. And when you see people that, end their lives feeling that they have like good well-being, that they are happy, usually it's because they perceive that they had a life that was fulfilling and full of purpose and they help others. It's not necessarily that they were happy all the time or that they were wealthy all the time or not even that they were, they had money all the time. It's more about like feeling this purpose in life that it takes more than, just focusing on what's best for me at every single moment.
Yeah, for sure. And I really love that outlook as well. I feel like it's so much better to look at it from that perspective as opposed to one that's more competitive or considering others before yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's really great. And with that in mind, how would you go on to define smart shopping?
Well, I would say that is carefully considering the products and services that you're purchasing as a consumer, trying to maximize your current needs and satisfy them while also keeping an eye on your long-term goals and well-being, right? Because in a way, like we all have this utilitarian needs that we have on a daily basis. Like we need to eat, we need to drink, we need to have shelter and communicate with others. But we also have all of these hedonic needs, right? We want to eat yummy food, we want to enjoy life. So with that in mind, you might really want to enjoy that nice coffee from a nice boutique coffee shop. Maybe you don't want to do that every day if it doesn't fit your budget, but you can do that once in a while to indulge. Or maybe I want to eat all the croissants and muffins every day, but that's not going to be healthy if you're doing that in the long run, right?
Yeah.
But it's kind of okay to do that once in a while.
Yeah.
So I think it's easier said than done, but it's all about balance, right? How do we make sure that we are satisfying our basic needs while also living fulfilling lives and understanding that we need means of payment to achieve those things. And
yeah, I think that's such a valid point about how we've got these basic needs, but then there's also like the more like fancy or elevated version of, for example, just getting a coffee. Instead, you could go to a like different coffee shop and try something that's more expensive and that like adds to the quality of your life. So I think balance is hard to achieve there when you want to live your life, but you also have
like restraints like money and finance, and if you get paid enough to be able to afford that. So how would you say smart shopping influences our personal productivity?
Yeah, so if you are trying to make sure you are able to be productive in all aspects of your life, you might want to do some planning ahead. You might want to make sure that you have enough earnings, right? So that's, I think, the most difficult part. Like, how do you plan your career? How do you plan your skill development as a professional to be able to afford things that are going to help you with our productivity?
Mm-hmm.
And then also acknowledging the things that you don't need to do yourself, right? So there are a lot of things that I've been doing myself. And then once you achieve a certain level of financial comfort, maybe you want to outsource that, right? So for example, yeah. I made a decision to plan when I was going to have children, right? I wanted to have a more established career before I did that. But it's also like your propensity to risk, like how comfortable would I be if I had difficulties having children later in life,
yeah.
Right? So I, you know, you first decide, is this a risk that I'm willing to take? And what do I need to do to accomplish something? And by the time I had children, I really love my work. Like, I love being a professor. I love being a researcher.
Yeah.
And to be able to also be a parent and be good at my job, I decided to hire a nanny.
Yeah.
Right? So I was spending tons of money with the nanny, but she was fabulous. And she was a person that was also a joy to be around with. And it's, but this is money well spent, right? So
yeah.
Or, you know, maybe you're going to buy something online versus spending the time to go to a specialty store and asking for advice, right? So not too long ago, I purchased a bicycle and I made sure I went to a store. Recently, I had to buy a pump for a bicycle. I went to a store. I didn't want to do that searching online. Currently, we're looking at potentially buying a home in Melbourne, which is not for the faint of heart.
Definitely not.
Very difficult. But we decided to consult with a mortgage broker, right? Because everything here is different and it's just not worth my time not asking for help on those things, because maybe, you know, you invest a little bit and you make better decisions, right? That can save you money.
Yeah. So is it all about putting your resources into something that is going to benefit you? So considering your wants and your needs and what you actually need?
Yes. Like, carefully deciding what are the resources I want to spend and for what, because sometimes we try to, you know, be as cheap as possible.
Mm.
And that doesn't necessarily means that you're going to save money in the long run.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm really curious, but what do you think goes through people's minds when they do decide to splurge and don't consider those sort of factors of where should I actually put my resources?
Well, when we get into too much splurging, when we get into like compulsive shopping, the problem is that people actually feel out of control and the rewards are very short-lived, right? So if I go on a shopping spree and I have an impulsive buying issue, then, you know, you get really happy, you get a thrill from the purchase itself, and then it's gone.
Yeah.
But you still need to pay those bills, right? Mm-hmm. So I think this is where a lot of consumers feel that they lose control and they are not really getting any benefit from those purchases because they bought them in this like spur of the moment and didn't carefully think whether that was something they actually wanted and actually would feel that it was really giving them something in the long run.
Yeah. So would you say it's important to consider the long-term impacts of what you're going to buy as opposed to just the short-term gratification?
Yes, exactly. Because it's very short-term gratification, right? So a lot of people who are compulsive shoppers, they really have the all the joy is coming from the acquisition itself, not the ownership.
Yeah.
So then the acquisition is so short-lived.
Yeah, for sure.
And then you have the bills to pay.
Yeah, I feel like everyone can relate to going shopping. You see something nice, you buy it, and you're on a high for like the rest of your day. And then you go home and you realize you've just spent hundreds of dollars, for example, on something that you probably don't really need. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But do you have any maybe strategies that we can impart on people to help minimize, you know, wasting their time and money?
A good strategy to do smart shopping and feel like you're really accomplishing your goals is to carefully think whether first you really need those products, right? So that might be a good strategy. Just taking that step back and trying to analyze, do I really need this product? And can I really afford it?
Yeah.
You know, how is my life going to be different with it or without it? So that would be like that first question of really pausing and thinking, do I really need this product? But another way to really do smart shopping would be making lists, right? So you plan ahead, you make a list, and you stick to it. That can really help people not to fall prey of like things that they saw and then suddenly they really want to buy.
Yeah.
A lot of people take enjoyment from like window shopping. I'm one of those. I just absolutely love window shopping. And nowadays with online shopping, another strategy is just you put things on your cart and you don't buy it right away. Or if you are visiting a store, you can put things on hold or decide, you know, to come back later. Consumers often might decide, okay, I'm going to take cash to the mall and I'm leaving my credit cards. I'm leaving all my cards away, right? So that can actually help people stay within a budget. So like creating budgets for things really help us stay within that budget and not overindulge. One thing that is interesting is that people tend to spend more when they're shopping with others. But if you need help on a specific purchase, you can definitely get a shopping buddy. It could be a friend, a relative, someone who has your best interests in mind as well and might not be as overwhelmed with the purchase.
Yeah.
And maybe they can help you do a better like shopping trip and not overspend or not buy something that you regret later.
Yeah, for sure. I personally feel like if I go shopping with other people, there's this pressure almost to buy something, or if you get more excited when you're shopping with other people and you're more inclined to buy something. But I feel like if I'm shopping on my own, I'm like, oh, do I really need that? No one's really pushing me or motivating me to buy it. So I'll just walk away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's some value too, to have that friend saying like, this looks fabulous on it. You should get it.
So,
you know, we have to save space for indulging ourselves and just enjoy life, right? But we don't want to get that process out of hand. I did some work on retail therapy because there was a lot of buzz in the media of like, you know, people can go shopping and feel better about their problems. And what we found was, yes, retail therapy can help, but it's all about control, right? And once you are shopping and you lose control, then those benefits go away. So it's usually this idea of, you know, I'm feeling sad. I don't feel like I have a lot of control in my life of things that I cannot change. And then, you know, maybe shopping can provide a distraction. It can be a way of people to assert agency and control their life. So yeah, if you're buying something and you feel like, okay, I made a smart decision, that can really help you feel better. But if you overspend, then you're just getting that whole process messed up because now you fail your own established like self-control that, you know, I had this budget and I went over it and so on.
Yeah, for sure. And I just want to go back to when you mentioned bringing cash instead of like your cards or cards where you don't have to pay immediately. What are your thoughts on things like Afterpay or like systems where you don't have to spend money immediately?
Well, I think having access to personal credit is great for so many things, right? I wouldn't be able to have purchased my first home without having access to credit. So this is an amazing feature of our modern society. Yeah. However, it can be a trap if we're not really spending wisely. So I like to always pay those like smaller things. I like to pay, even if I put on credit card, I want to pay every month. and never just pay the minimum. I'd rather just pay my bills in full every month because those are recurring bills for like bigger expenses, maybe a vacation, you know, buying a car, buying a home. For those things, I feel like lines of credit makes more sense because you need to have them in order to make those purchases.
Yeah, for sure. And do you also feel like the internet might make it harder and like social media?
There is, yeah, we are just bombarded with marketing at all times, right? Yeah. Whether we are online or offline, we always get those messages trying to convince us to buy something. And yeah. I think that when we are online, there might be more social comparison processes. If you're looking at things online, you have availability of everything at all the time, right? So you can find everything you can possibly want to purchase online. So it can definitely make it harder to assert that self-control. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And are there like ways we can still be a part of like social media and like internet, but not let all these ads or personalized ads and algorithms get to us?
It's really difficult, right? Because I like to think that I don't buy anything just because I saw it online,
you know?
And I often ask my students, you know, give me an example of something that you purchased because you saw someone mentioning it on the internet. But how would I know? Like, maybe I saw something years ago, you know, you're getting all these messages and we are forming attitudes towards those brands, towards those companies. And maybe later on I buy something because I saw something on social media. So we are definitely always being influenced. And I think it helps to think, who do we want to be influenced by?
Yeah.
Right? I don't like that view, that very negative view of marketing, that we're trying to get people to buy things that they don't want.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I believe in, and that's not what I teach my students. What we're trying to improve is the way people exchange value,
okay,
right?
Yeah.
And the idea is that there should be value in those transactions for all parties, right? If it's a company and a consumer. And we often use marketing to better communicate with our consumers. So I like to see marketing communications as ways for me as a consumer to learn more about products that are actually going to help me achieve my life goals, right? And then if a company is trying to sell me something that I don't think it's for me, I don't necessarily need to pay attention to that communication.
Yeah.
Right? So if you want to be an effective marketer, you need to find ways to reach the right consumers at the right time with the right message.
Yeah.
If I want to be a good consumer, I should spend my attention channels with companies that can actually help me find what's best for me.
Yeah. And I think that's a really great way to see it. Like there's one group doing one thing and another group doing another thing, but it's their own responsibility about how they go about doing it, especially as a consumer, just because you see an ad about something, it doesn't mean you always have to buy it. So there is self-control, I guess,
yes,
in that as well.
Yes.
So that's very important. And I've got a little misconception here that I want to debunk with you. Do you think it's true that sales will always save people money?
Not necessarily, right? So one of the purposes of like marketing sales and coming up with those sales promotions is to embed a sense of sometimes scarcity or like limited time offer. Like, so we're trying to get consumers to act now.
Yeah.
We're trying to get consumers to potentially buy something that they were not considering. So if you feel like that product is for you and you get it at a discount or any other sort of promotion, good for you.
Mm.
The problem is that often it's not something we're looking
for.
And we're just lured to believe that that's something we need right away. For example, the other day I was seeing this discussion on social media that someone was giving advice on how to be savvy shoppers. And one of them was to sign up for newsletters from companies so that you know about their sales, right? But if you are going to buy that product for sure, that can help you save money.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not going to buy those products for sure, like that might just be like triggering you to buy something that you weren't planning or maybe you didn't need. So it's sales can be helpful if you are going to buy anyway. But marketers try to put their promotions on things that people would not buy anyway, right?
That's true. Yeah.
You know, when you look at like grocery store data, you see, for example, canned tuna is something that is very rarely deeply discounted because people would buy like tens of cans, like 10, 20, 30, because it has a long shelf life and people really know what's the price.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But you are way more likely to see deep discounts on orange juice, for example, that, you know, takes storage space in your fridge. And, you know, maybe you want to have a sales promotion there to induce trial.
Yeah.
Right. But if you are, if you just buy things as a consumer because it's on sale, you're not really maximizing your own goals on what you should buy. You're really letting the marketers determine what you're buying.
Yeah. And I always feel like when people see a sale, whether that be clothes or like you were talking about groceries, there's this thing that like switches in their mind that says, oh, now it's okay to buy this and buy a lot of it because it's on sale.
Yeah.
So do you think sales make us feel better about the shopping that we do?
Absolutely. Yeah. People want to find a justification of why that was a savvy decision. Right.
Yeah. But do you think sometimes a sale might be a loophole or an unhealthy way to go about shopping?
Yeah, because if that's the main reason for you to be purchasing, you know, what are you actually accomplishing, right? You're just getting a bunch of stuff that don't necessarily have as much utility for you as a consumer. What are you going to use it for? Or is it going to be in the, you know, in your closet and you're not going to use that anymore?
Yeah, for sure. And if you could give consumers three questions to ask themselves before they decide to purchase something, what would those be?
Well, if I were to tell consumers three questions before deciding whether to buy something, the first one would be, do I really need this? Can I afford it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the last one could be, you know, does this bring me joy? And this comes from a very more like Asian tradition. I don't know if you're familiar with Marie Kondo.
Yes.
She had the whole, like the KonMari process of like decluttering your home and, you know, analyzing everything. Does this bring me joy? But I see this from like Asian cultures that there is a lot of, okay, you have objects in your life, but what is the meaning of it?
Yeah.
Is it meaningful for me or not? And if it's not, like, why would I be spending my money on this? I could spend my money elsewhere.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like even I do that sometimes where I'll justify a purchase because it's something that's sentimental or it has value. And therefore, when I look at it, I'm not going to see it as something expensive, but rather something that's meaningful towards me.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that works for some people. Yeah.
And another trick that I use, especially when it's something that is completely hedonic, that you can't even compare, like, for example, art, right? Mm. So a few years ago, I was in a local art show in back in the U.S. And I saw this these pieces. There were four of them. And they were called, I think, Afternoon Commute. I forgot the name. Oh. But, you know, I went home and, you know, I mentioned, like, oh, this is pretty. Like, who did it? And I actually knew the artist, you know, not that much closer, you know, it was a small town.
Yeah.
I knew who it was. And, you know, I went back home and I woke up the next day and I was still thinking about it. And I started envisioning, like, how would that be on my walls? And I mentioned that to my husband. And at that point in our lives, we had enough, like, financial security that we could spend on, like, buying some nice custom-made art. And he was like, oh, I'll give it to you for your birthday, right? So then he went there and purchased. And those are pieces that I absolutely love.
Yeah.
And then, like, living in that small town, like, I actually became, like, really good friends with the artist.
Okay.
And I think art is such a good way for us to express those, like, hedonic needs and motives. And why not, you know, also help someone, you know, help an artist, right? So I thought it was really nice.
Yeah, and that kind of reminds me of when people get tattoos. Like, they're very expensive. Some people would spend thousands on something that covers just one arm. But it has a lot of meaning to them and it stays with them forever. Mm-hmm. So I guess that can be applied to, you know, what you were talking about with the artworks. Like, sure, it's expensive, but it's something that you can appreciate for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can do that with smaller things as well. I have to confess that I really like shoes. And the pair of shoes that I'm wearing today, like I was just window shopping in a mall, like buying something else. And I saw them and I went home and I kept thinking about them. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back and buy those shoes. But I think I felt better about making the decision that way than buying the shoes right away.
Yeah. And do you think that could be another strategy? For example, you see something, you're not too sure, you take a step back, go home. Yeah. If you're still thinking about it, go back and buy it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right? Because that really helps you answer that question, whether that's something that brings you joy or it's meaningful to you. And it's not necessarily about the budget. It's not necessarily about the actual need, mm-hmm. But just something else that we, you know, we don't just buy things for utilitarian purposes. And that's totally fine.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you for sharing those with us. I'd love to move into our practices experiment debrief section. So here, I'm just going to ask you about how you personally deal with smarter shopping. So is there a practice that you can recommend to cultivate smart shopping that you might do?
Yeah, and I think, again, it depends on the person, your thinking style and your stage of life. When I first moved to the United States, for example, I was a very poor graduate student and I budget everything. I had everything on a spreadsheet because I'm moving to a new country, new language, like new grocery stores. So I basically tracked all of my expenses and I did even like allocation because I knew the first month, you know, you buy cleaning supplies.
Yeah.
And it's not fair to you to feel like you overspent on the first month when you had to stock your house. So I split it across months, all my purchases that were like more long term. And I really used that budget to help me decide how much I could spend. And, you know, can I buy food that is a little bit better? Can I afford to go to the movies? How often? Like very, very carefully, or like, you know, I'm going to buy a car. What car can I buy? Can I maintain that car, right? Because usually, you know, we bought an old car. Can I actually pay for the maintenance of this car and gas and all of that?
Yeah.
So that's something that served a purpose at that time, but it is in a way very stressful and time consuming.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't necessarily need to do that all stages of your life. Mm-hmm. The other thing is if you're buying something that is complex, like, so for example, when I purchased a home when we moved to Iowa to join Iowa State University, like just how do I compare those things? Like, so making, like carefully looking at the neighborhood and location, the price, size of the home, features, but also sleeping on it and being, you know, is this a place that I feel home or not?
Yeah.
Right? Those higher order questions that a real estate agent can help you think about evaluation, but only you know whether a place feels like home for you.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like that point is really important. Like only you know if something is okay. So I guess only you know if it's right to buy this or if you really need it. So is it about holding yourself accountable as well?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. And do you think there are any challenges for when you do this practice in your life?
Just sometimes finding the time to do it properly. Right. So a lot of decisions are very complex. And this is another thing that we teach our students, right? Because you might put together spreadsheets with product options and the features that you're looking for, and you might assign ways to them and come up with like which one is higher.
Yeah.
Right. So you can do that, like try to assign actual values for things. Consumers don't really do that. They might do that if they're making a big decision like buying a car or buying a house or maybe buying a computer. But we actually do that in our minds, right? And when marketers are trying to model those decisions, they're trying to infer how much each of those features are important to people. But what I would say is like, yeah, if you're trying to decide where to eat for lunch, right? You might think places that are affordable, places that are potentially healthy and places that you like and places that are close enough. And you're going to do all this rank ordering in your brain. And we do that very efficiently without necessarily assigning values. But once you get to decisions that become very overwhelming, I would say that's the time that you get paper and pencil or a spreadsheet and just put it all together. That can really help you make decisions on products that are more complex.
Yeah. And how would you say this impacts your productivity, like the practices you do?
Yeah, because you don't want to spend too much time to decide on things.
Yeah.
Right? You don't want to get to that point that you have decision paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always this idea of like, how much effort do I need to put to come up with a decision that is satisfactory enough for me?
Yeah.
Right? But if you are getting overwhelmed, like in your search process, maybe you should change your strategy. Like maybe putting things on paper can help. And if you do that, you're potentially saving time or making a wiser decision now that is going to help you protect your finances or help keep you productive and so on.
Yeah, awesome. And I know we said that it depends on the individual, but would you recommend this practice to most people?
I think everybody would have situations where it's helpful to stop and try to put things on paper on a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
I think everyone can benefit from them.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like taking it from your mind and actually putting it into a place that's physical allows you to see it in a different way as well.
Discuss with others because sometimes just speaking out loud and try to explain why you are doing something helps you find holes in your whole rationale for coming up with a decision.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I wanted to touch on is this, you know, buying online that you asked before.
Mm.
It can be very overwhelming, right? And there are a lot of sellers online and you don't necessarily know about their reputation. So I would say if you're buying things online, make sure you the retailer is reputable, make sure that the brand has good reviews. But for a lot of other things, I think going to an actual store, it's much better, right? Especially if you don't know where to start searching, then you can talk to a person who is a specialist on it and who is actually usually passionate about it. And if you're going to your neighborhood store, like they really care about their reputation, right? So they're not going to sell you something that is likely to fail soon.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that'll lead perfectly into some of the questions we've got from our audience, which I'd love to ask you now. Our first question is, are there specific tools, you know, other than like the practices we've talked about, that can help us track our spending and monitor our financial goals?
Yes, there are tons of apps out there. I don't really use any myself, but I think if you like to use an app to track your budget, that's really helpful.
Mm.
I do my own spreadsheets when I want or just paper. And it's just finding something that matches your own thinking style. So I would recommend your listener to just go and like, just go search online for specific apps, for example, that can help them budget. That would be a good start if they are an app type person.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts on like those self-help books, like the financial books out there?
Well, self-help books, I guess, in a way, it depends, right? All those things are easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, reading a book doesn't mean you're immediately able to implement it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the prescription done for one person doesn't necessarily fit your own like thinking style and your preferences as a person or as a consumer. So yeah, some of those books would be good, but some of them might not be that helpful.
Yeah, of course. And our next question, we've got one that's based around trying to find the best deals. So the question is, what are some lesser known tips that can help people discover hidden savings that they can make?
Yeah, I would always like, if you're looking for something, look for prices in stores, look for prices online. You can look at price trackers to see how the prices are moving. You can look for coupons. Like usually when I'm buying online, I always search for coupons as well to mm-hmm. see if something's on sale.
Yeah.
There are stores that might give you some benefits if you are a member, right? So from small things like free shipping to maybe better discounts, better deals, right? And again, not that there's no free lunch. So you're paying for the shipping, but yeah. it's just... Sometimes you're paying extra for the shipping.
Yeah, for sure. And our next question is, what are some effective techniques to overcome procrastination and take some proactive steps towards being more financially productive?
Oh, I love that one because yeah. I am guilty as charged of being somewhat a procrastinator.
I think we all are.
And I'm really trying to change my demeanor, and I think yeah. I've been good about it. The problem is oftentimes we procrastinate sometimes because we want to be perfectionists. So we want to do things perfectly and then we just never get around doing them.
Yeah.
We also have differences in personality in terms of like approach avoidance behavior. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people want to avoid problems or want to avoid talking to others. And you should not leave things to the last minute.
Yeah,
right? So
for sure.
I would say, for example... And this is something that I tell my students. If you leave an assignment to do by the deadline, if anything happens, you're late. Mm-hmm. And then you need to tell your professor, oh, can you give me more time? And this is and that. And then I tell them, suppose, okay, you're working for a company and you have a major presentation to deliver. And one of your kids is sick. And then it's the day before the presentation, you email your boss and you say, okay, I won't be able to do the presentation tomorrow. My kid is sick. I'm sorry. What can we do? I'm sorry. And your boss, being hopefully very nice, will be like, oh, it's all right. These things happen. Can you send me the materials that you put together? How would that sound if you're like, I haven't started yet. I was starting it tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
Right? It's not going to look good. So kind of like if you are really a bad procrastinator, just... lie to yourself on your to-do list in your calendar. I do that. So I do a lot of, you know, things that I need to do on a calendar. I might have the due date, but I assign time to work on it beforehand.
Yeah.
And I'm not happy if I finish by the deadline. I'm always trying to finish ahead of time.
Yeah.
Some people like to put everything on their schedule. Like, okay, this time slot, I'm going to work on this. This time slot, I'm going to work on that. That works for a lot of people, but for me, for example, because I work on this like bigger problem, like problems, research, I don't necessarily know how long it will take for me to do a task.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes you're trying to find that moment of flow, right? That moment that you're really creative, good for writing, and so on. So what I do in those cases is that I plan for the day. And I say, these are the things that I want to do Monday, Tuesday. And I just don't necessarily do it in on the computer because if I put on a schedule on the computer, then I see that line going down.
Mm.
And then I see my to-do list not getting shorter.
Yeah.
And it's really nerve-wracking. So I'd rather just put what I'm going to do and really prioritizing, not doing the easy things first.
Yeah.
Like a lot of us get a lot of, we feel good by crossing things out of our checklist, especially on paper.
Yeah.
And we tend to put the easy ones first.
Yeah.
Or sometimes we write things that we already done so that we can cross it off.
Yeah.
So what I say is like, make sure you make time for the stuff that really matters and that is your priority. So prioritizing those tasks.
Yeah.
And making sure you accomplish them.
For sure. And I feel like it... as we say, a lot easier said than done. How does someone go about actually taking accountability and realizing that they procrastinate a lot of these things? I feel like that's probably the first step in order to being able to be better, is realizing that you have these tendencies.
Mm-hmm. Well, like documenting things help, right? So if you make a plan, then you can look at your plan and see if you were accountable to it. Getting an accountability buddy can help.
Yeah.
Right. So getting someone, and it could be someone from work, could be a friend, could be a family member, that you just say out loud, I need to do this by that time, just increases your chances of doing it. Right. Because we don't want to be lying to others that we're working on something when we're not. So like this, just voicing it out really helps us to be accountable for those tasks.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for answering our questions from the audience. We've just got our last section here for you today, which is our open mic. So here you can talk about anything that you're passionate about. We could go over anything we've already talked about, but is there anything that's on your mind that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like people will always be stressed managing their finances. I think if we were not stressed, it would be a little awkward, right? Because it is nerve-wracking not knowing what the future will bring or how much financial security you will have. So in a way, it's like planning your life to make sure you don't have a lot of uncertainty around, like, and knowing how to deal with that uncertainty. And accepting it, right? Because we do not know what's coming tomorrow or next year. So just being able to accept that we don't control everything, the best that we can do is to prepare ourselves for life. And if this like holistic idea of our whole self, like how do we maximize our goals? How do we maximize our well-being in the long run? How do we make sure that the people around us, the people that we love, are taken care of as well? And I would say if I were to add one thing that people often forget is taking care of yourself also includes our bodies, right? We only have one, and that's the physical and mental part of us. And making sure that our financial decisions are helping us also take care of ourselves, but realizing that every decision that we make affects our whole body, our whole soul, and, you know, how can we honor ourselves and our existence?
Yeah, for sure. And just talking about that has reminded me about how there are certain topics of finance that have been in the news surrounding, for example, robo-debt. I'm not sure if you've heard much about that happening here, but like it really takes a toll, especially debt, on young people's mental health. And I feel like it's really important to bring about awareness for how we can, you know, cope with, as we get older, we have more financial responsibilities. Mm-hmm. So like, I think it's important to have awareness about it's okay that we get into, you know, different situations that are more, there's more pressure around it. So what's the best way to deal with just the things that come along with age?
Yeah, and I think what you mentioned just made me think about like how much privilege a lot of us have, right? And you had the question about the self-help books and, you know, why they don't necessarily are helpful for everyone. People come from very different backgrounds. I feel like very privileged that, you know, my family was able to invest on education that really like springboarded me to be able to achieve financial security. But it is true that it's a lot of the things that the older generations were able to afford are not necessarily as available to younger consumers. And, you know, like it's really hard for people to afford housing these days. But there are, it's important to also consider like the safety net that we have in different societies. That was one thing that really attracted me in Australia. I think this is a much flatter society, and it's you have less income inequality here, which really makes it easier for everyone to achieve a little bit more fulfillment with their lives.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like a lot of us are privileged in some sense. And then there's a lot of us who aren't as privileged, and there's a lot of financial insecurity that comes along with that. But I think having conversations like this is so important surrounding mental health as well when it comes to finance, because it can be very stressful, like we talked about.
Yeah, and you can have actual physical consequences by experiencing stress with finances. And the book that I mentioned in the beginning, The Myth of Normal, does talk about that, like how financial insecurity can has this profound like outcomes in your body by just living through so much stress. So it's definitely a problem.
Yeah. And I think knowing that we have resources we can turn to help cope with it. I mean, we did talk about some basic ones, like there are apps, there are books, there are different strategies we can use when we go window shopping. But then I feel like there's a deeper layer of how it affects people's mental health when they realize they can't afford their basic needs and stuff. So I feel like knowing that you always have something to turn to is important.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, that also brings us to the end of today's episode. But thank you so much for coming into the studio and joining us today.
Thank you, Johanna. It was really a pleasure being here and meeting you.
Yeah, no worries. It was lovely chatting to you. And for those of us who want to find out more about you, where can we go?
You can find me on Monar's website. I also have a personal website, and I am also on LinkedIn and Twitter. So those would be the places to go.
Beautiful. Well, we also have Beatrice's details in the description below. But to everyone listening, please don't forget to like and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. And we'll see you guys next time.
You have been listening to Work in Progress, the Personal Productivity Science Insights podcast produced by the Life Management Science Labs. Listen to episodes from LMSL's 10 Life Management Perspectives on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or other podcasting apps on your smartphone. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating our show, sharing it, and subscribing to our channel, as it helps other people find it and us grow to bring you more quality resources. More of our work can be found on our website, pp.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Joanna. Thanks for tuning in.